What I would basically like to do is really just get as many of your recollections of it as possible as a way to construct, at least at Lockheed, what the picture was. Even if we can't get that good a picture of some of the other places, it will at least give us a very good idea. Because I think from the figures thus far, I would say that the women at Lockheed constituted probably 35 to 40% of all the women in aircraft in Southern California, in the Los Angeles area.
Oh, really?
Because there were a little over, no, actually, more than that.
I think there were 49,000.
Well, one of the figures in the company materials that seems to talk about a peak of 35,000.
Well, now, I thought at the peak of employment, of the total employment at Lockheed of all of the plants was 115,000. Did they give you that figure? It was not quite 50%. I think the women, there were 49% mm-hmm. or something like that, of the total employment.
Now, that might include, of course, the figures I have been using is the Los Angeles industrial area. So that, probably wouldn't include those others. In 43, which was the peak employment, all-time employment high, was reported in September of 99,250, but it looks like the year average. In 43 was 90,853 for Lockheed. The difficult thing is that every set of figures ends up being different.
Yeah.
But we can get a fairly.
In my mind, it was, and I've quoted that, not that it was official, but that at one point there mm-hmm. were 115, and I thought that the women were about 49% of that. Which is a very large number.
That's one of the things we keep trying mm-hmm. to double check.
Those records
figures
should be available, if nothing else, you should.
Let me ask first, what was your own background before you came to Lockheed?
Well, I was working, I was at home. And then my husband's position was eaten up. And when I went to Lockheed, I went in as the lowest paid clerk. 51 cents an hour, I think.
Was this your first work then? Outside?
Well, I had worked before I was married, and had worked until my first child came, and then I hadn't worked.
What sort of work was that? Was it related to what you were doing?
No, it was mainly office work.
Hmm.
And I had worked in a little town, and then my husband's business was absorbed by the war. He was in sales with a large road equipment company, and all of their all that they could produce was taken then by the war, and there was just no position for a salesman, so he was out of work, so he was finding difficulty getting anything because the same situation applied. So I thought, well, I will try. And I was hired in the I think I told you this I was hired in the medical division, and I was 30 and older than most of the people going to work, and I made up my mind I would speak to each person and let them know that I recognize them as a person. I would, frequently call them by name, and I would, say something personal. Your hair is nice, or I like your blouse, or whatever it was. So those people kept coming back and saying, what'll I do? Do you know what I should do about this? And it could be company related, or do you have any idea where I could get a babysitter or whatever? And so,
now, how was it that you came into contact with all these people?
I was placed in the medical unit, and everybody had to have a physical before they actually were hired. They were hired up to the physical. If they passed their physical, they reported to work. If they did not pass their physical, they did not have the job. So I did see everyone who came, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the company decided that there were too many people around my desk. So they moved me around the corner, and they began to be aware that this was something that was developing that perhaps they should listen to. So then I moved around the corner into a department where the job that I was assigned to do was not quite as crucial. So then I had more time to talk to these people. So anyway, that's how.
But it remained very informal for quite a while then, it seems.
For a while. And then they decided to give me the job. And there was a man by the name of Mr. Perkins, who was the personnel manager. I think his name was Perkins. And he had talked to a couple of women who apparently had been applying for this kind of a job. I didn't have anything in my mind at all. I wasn't working for anything except just to do whatever I could. And these people had been applying, and he called me in and talked to me at great length about what I was doing and how I felt about it. And I don't know what reason that was. And there was one lady, a psychologist, I think, who had written a book with her husband who came out, I think, to apply for that position. And he called me in then and talked to me with her. And I think he liked my answers better than hers, because I remember that he stopped and said, "Do you have any children?" And she said, "No." And he said, "Well, that's what I find is a problem. Many psychologists write books on children, and yet they have not really experienced it." And so it was right after that he assigned me to this job. And I remember saying, "Well, what do you want me to do?" And he said, "I want you to go into the factory and counsel."
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what I wanted to do, and the men did not want any part of me.
They did not want you coming into the plant?
No, they didn't want me. They didn't want my help. They didn't want anything. So I went in, and I decided I had to contact every one of them. So I contacted them and said, "Well, this is what I'm supposed to do. If I can help you, fine. If I can't, fine, that's great. I don't want to bug you, but I am here, and if there's anything you need, mm-hmm. you can call me."
You contacted every supervisor?
Mm-hmm.
In each?
Yeah.
Still only in Burbank?
Well, yes.
Or the feeder plants as well?
Well, that was only, that was only in Burbank. Mm-hmm. That was at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't Vega.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about Lockheed at first. And then they told me to check the restrooms in the plant and see if they were adequate. Well, and this was all when we were trying to make a job, figure out if there was necessary to have a job. And my husband kidded me. I didn't like that very much. I didn't want to do that very much for some reason. And then I thought, well, they want them counted, I'll count them, and I'll. So I was kind of angry, mm-hmm. and I came back and wrote a sort of a disgusted memo and said, we have so many women, we have this and we that, we need this and this and this and this. And it wasn't my nature to be that way, but I was angry. And so I wrote this all down, and I gave it to the then supervisor of that department. And about a week later, it came back from Mr. Gross saying, "Order everything she says." And I did, and should have ordered about 10 times that much. But I think at least we got that show on the road. And then I began to see what they were trying to do, but I didn't see it. I was just, then they wanted me to do every job. So I tried every job. I think they figured if I could do it, anybody could do it. And so, they tried the weights of the rivet guns and all the rest of it. If I could hold it and do it, then they felt comfortable putting a woman on it.
What do you recall? What year that was? Was that still in 41, or would that be into 42 by then?
That probably was into 42 mm-hmm. because you see, the buildup was beginning very slowly in 41, and mm-hmm. I started in July, and Pearl Harbor was in December, mm-hmm. and so then it must have been in 42. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was.
Can you describe the various jobs that you then tried? How long would they keep you on each of the tasks?
Actually, not that long. I would like to have stayed longer. If I had stayed longer on each one, I would have had a better idea of the job and how tired you mm-hmm. got and the mm-hmm. whole thing. Actually, I think the exercise was merely to see if I could do it. And I don't think I can remember. There were electrical jobs and there were... the rivet gun mm-hmm. was the one that required the weight. Mm-hmm. And then there were handling the templates, the mm-hmm. steel that you laid out. And it was just plain dirty, dirty work. But they all work that anyone could mm-hmm. do.
What, were you kept on for a full work day on these?
Probably a half, mm-hmm. half to a full. Some days I would be down there a full day.
But you did get a sense, at least.
But I knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. I knew what they had to cope with to do it. I remember one time I was going to quit. I was so upset because they were building, and this should be in the movies, they were building airplanes. It was pouring rain, and they were building them in the opening. And they were trying to build the structure over it. And the girls, their hands would get so cold that they would have to come in the restrooms and warm their hands so they could go back. And I was so angry. And I went down to Mr. Shapley. And Elsie Muller was Mr. Barker, Mr. Chapelet's secretary, and I didn't really know I was going to get in to see him. I wasn't quite prepared. I was angry, and I said, I want to talk to Mr. Chapelet. And you didn't darken those executive halls very often, but she said, well, go right in. And I wasn't quite prepared for that. So I got in, and I told him that I had intended to give my resignation that day, but before I left, I wanted him to know a few things. So I just tumbled out everything I thought about the whole thing, and at that time I was working for Mr. Fowle, John Fowle, the Englishman, who really thought all of the women belonged in the kitchen. And he liked me, and we got along all right, but he didn't like women, and he didn't want to do one thing that would help. And that just couldn't go on. And so I told him that, and I told him about these women working out there, and I said, it's just dreadful to have people working like that. They can't do the work. You're wasting, you know. I went on and on. And so when I finished, he said, well, Susan, I won't ask you not to, but I hope you don't quit. And I will tell you what we're doing. So then they did. But as is true of all big companies, they don't really tell employees what their mm-hmm. plans are. They can't until they reach a certain point, and then they can tell them. But that's what was happening then. They had the plans. They were trying. But here were the airplane. Here were the people working on the airplane. Here was the rain coming down. Here was the structure going up. It really makes a fascinating picture.
Well, I didn't know if you noticed in the LA Times this Sunday, after the article appeared, there was a letter from a woman who worked in Lockheed talking, saying, I don't know about those good working conditions. I remember that we froze in the winter and boiled in the summer. Mm-hmm. So your direct supervisor then was this Mr. Fowle.
Well, that was another... At first, let's see, what was his name? I
Do you
it was all
the name
sort of
Hayden Jenkins was
Jenkins. Yeah, that's his. He was the man, not Perkins. It was Jenkins that first assigned me to the job. And he was funny because they brought him in, and I don't know where he came from either. They brought him in, and as they used to have a saying at Lockheed, be nice to the janitor because he may be your boss. This man was sort of floating around. He didn't have a job. He was just sort of floating around. And he would come into the medical unit, and I would call him somebody else, probably Perkins' name, and he'd come back and say, well, I sure wish my name was Perkins, because he must have made an impression on you. And then he later became, I think, the personnel manager.
Well, I think so. Mm-hmm. Where I had gotten in the papers was by November 20th, they talk about 9 counselors, you're being the chief of counseling, he being the direct supervisor, 6 at Lockheed and 3 at Vega by November of 42.
Of 42. That could be. Now, you see, he would have been the big wheel. And then these other men, Mr. Fowle and I can't think of the other guy, they would have been like little department heads that would also report. So I would report to that person rather than the top. I wound up reporting to the top guy, but for a long time they didn't know what to do with us. Mm-hmm. They really didn't know what to do with us.
Well, how quickly after this amorphous job description began, did they start to bring in other counselors?
I can't tell you how long. It was quite a while, though, because I had a dandy book accumulated by that time, simply of everything that we could call on. And I, got that by calling on people. I remember Ivy Grace with the Salvation Army. It was fantastic. And she would do anything for us if we sent somebody to her. She always said, we give soup, soap, and salvation in the order that it comes. So we counted on that. So if somebody really needed help, they would take care of them. And then they would find out what agency they belonged to.
Mm.
So we were developing that kind of relationship so they wouldn't get the runaround. Too often, and today is true as well, too often when you go to a social welfare agency, they get exactly which side of the street you're on and this and that, and you can't get help if you really need help. Mm-hmm. And you're at your wit's end, and that's the last place you go. You can't handle it. And so that's what we did an awful lot of.
Well, it sounds like from a very early point, after the floundering and counting the bathrooms and doing the jobs, that you began to try and...
Well, I began to write down everything I did. Every time somebody came to me and asked me for help, I would try to find the help, and I'd write it in my book so that if anybody else came for that kind of help, I would have some place to start.
Hmm.
So, and I just like giving poor Mr. Fowle a black eye, but I remember when they told me that I needed help, and I went to Mr. Fowle. He was trying to prepare the way as well, and he said, now don't you tell anybody anything. You make everybody come to you. And I said, I barely know what I'm doing. How could they possibly start if I didn't tell them the little bit that I know? So anyway, but that was why it couldn't flourish under him. But there was just an awful lot of just simply developing that kind of information. And then when people, I remember one of the men who wanted to have nothing to do with me, about the second week that I was on the job, called and said, would you please come down here? And so I went down. Well, a girl had come in a bare midriff, and all the men were hitting themselves with hammers. And that kind of, then he realized that I could be of some help. Not much, but I could be of some help. And so I talked to the girl, and then, of course, then they began to develop the safety procedures so that nobody could go mm-hmm. in there in sandals. Mm-hmm. They had to have, because it was necessary. Everything had to be finally written down because they weren't doing it right. And a lot of people didn't know how to dress. And I can remember we talked about uniforms and we looked at uniforms. Well, then, you know, the company would have felt they had to invest the money in the uniforms. So then it grows into something like that, and so that you have to wear the kind of thing that is acceptable mm-hmm. for the work.
But it sounds as if it was almost a very slow learning process, that everything was so new to everybody.
Yes, it was. It was for everybody. And then it was a question of what do we do with these counselors? Who do we assign them to? So then we tried to assign them to the man who had the biggest department and of women.
Mm-hmm.
And then those women would report ultimately to the works manager. And the works manager was terrific. And it happened to be Penn Holter. And he, I thought, did a great job. The women reported, they were paid, in other words, by that department, mm-hmm. but they really reported to me functionally, which was very ticklish, because some of the women, as they became very sure of themselves in their positions, would think they didn't have to pay any attention to me. And then what would happen is the first time they did something on their own, then Penn Holter would call me and say, did you authorize mm-hmm. this? And then, you know, we'd
have to basically get that. All of the, as the first group of counselors anyhow came in, they were signed directly to the
departments.
And what department was that? Do you recall?
I can't. Well, it was all in manufacturing. There were many departments mm-hmm. in there, and I don't remember. They were numbered, and there were...
So he would be, for instance, the plant manager of that particular...
Well, he was the works manager mm-hmm. of all of the manufacturing end of it in all the plants. So the plants being everywhere, the downtown plant, the Burbank plant, the two in Burbank, you know, there's plant mm-hmm. three, two, and then there was the one up in Taft.
Now, what would be the procedure? Would a woman, say, who wanted help, and I guess we have to distinguish between the early days when it was just you and then maybe mm-hmm. increasingly more counselors, would they come directly to you, or would they go to their supervisor on the floor who would then send them to you?
Either way.
Mm-hmm.
Either way. And the trick was, and sometimes they didn't want their supervisor to know they had a problem.
Mm.
They were trying to get help. And that was kind of why it was good to keep it sort of unofficial, because they didn't feel that the company need know, really, if mm-hmm. they had a problem. And I thought that was a very important quality in the job, that it be that way, because at first they felt if anybody knew they had a problem, it might affect their job, and mm-hmm. they might not keep their job. But if it came to me, I'd just give them the information, mm-hmm. and they could take it from there, and it was quicker than any other way they could get it.
So it sounds like they viewed it as a confidential,
yeah.
almost like a confidant.
Yes.
In effect.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the counseling of it, I remember one lady, and I don't know if that's written in any of the articles, but I can remember this one woman came in and I think it is written in one of the articles. She was telling the supervisor how to do things. And I did this many, many times. I said, well, you just listen to me now, and I'll tell you the story. And I would tell, because she's the only one who can do anything about it. And So when they would repeat the story back, they would come to the point where they knew what they had to do. And so it really, I didn't do anything, mm-hmm. really.
But and all of this, though, was techniques that you developed on your own. You
oh, yes.
Any
no.
training or done any no. reading and any of these
well,
sorts
I've
of things?
Well, I've always been intrigued with it, but I had not done it professionally mm-hmm. or and studied it formally, no.
So these were techniques.
However, many of the women who were hired were women who had that education.
Mm.
As many as I had some problems with that too. I thought if they had been educated formally, it would be easier for them to do that. And I remember a friend of mine brought Dr. Brighaus from Occidental to lunch one day, and I didn't know who it was, and he just asked me to join them, and then he said, I want you to tell us, Susan, what you think of psychology as a prerequisite for this kind of work. So I took off without knowing who I was talking to, and I said, well, if psychology is absorbed in your body and it comes out like common sense, it's all right, but otherwise it is not all right. I was really getting hot with some of the women who were treating them as case studies mm-hmm. instead of just human beings. Mm-hmm. And I really thought everyone I hired would take my job because I really thought they should.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't, and I've never, it's always been a puzzle to me why they didn't. Except that I think the men began to know me. And I can remember saying, now you can't say that because you're talking about a woman and I'm a woman. And they said, no, you're not. You're just Susan, you know. So they got used to me rather than, and the other ones mm-hmm. were hard for them to get used to.
Wait, did you actually hire the others or
yes.
was that done by someone else?
No, I did.
Now, when the when you talked about keeping this record, basically, as I understand, then the women would come to you, and again, this would be in the earlier period, I guess,
mm-hmm.
before you had more counselors, with a problem, maybe housing problems,
yeah.
childcare problems,
yeah.
and then you would attempt to locate resources in the community that could assist
right.
in these problems.
Right. And we developed a lot. And we would go and talk to these people. We talked to merchants, keep the stores open. You know, the stores weren't open at night, so people could
mm-hmm.
shop if they worked all day. We did, you know, just in all the things that that are done today
mm-hmm.
were not done in those days.
Right.
And we had to, and we talked to the school board and the social welfare, the YWCA, the various organizations.
And did you run some sort of housing?